Okay, good morning, and welcome to the Stock Market Strategies on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Ed Handley, Certified Financial Planner, Senior Vice President Investments, Fulcrum Securities, LLC, and Portfolio Manager. Fulcrum Securities, a member of FINRA SIPC. We clear through Pershing, LLC, a subsidiary Bank of New York Mellon, member of the New York Stock Exchange. Program will focus on strategies for the financial markets with an emphasis on technical analysis, macroeconomics. We are a live call-in show. We'll take your questions this morning. The numbers for your call-in are 202-465-3080. That's 202-465-3080. Programs are streamed to www.federalnewsradio.com. Click on Listen, select the format. Programs are also archived. Just click on Stock Market Strategies. Navigation is quite easy. I manage money institution retail accounts using combination stocks, bonds, ETFs, mortgage pools, currency structured products, longs and shorts, almost any hedge that I can get. Top-down strategy, tactical, not strategic allocation. Also run the Fulcrum Fee Program. My email address is edh@fulcrumsecurities.com. Telephone numbers during business hours, not today, please, 866-689-4001. I also do a podcast twice a week, and those programs are archived on www.edhandley.com. Check it out, please. Please remember the opinions and views expressed during the broadcast are not to be considered specific recommendations. Individual investor decision should only be made after considering one's own circumstances, including tolerance for risk. Investors should consider including fundamental, technical, and quantitative analysis before making final investment decisions. Caveat emptor. Okay, let me give you the lineup for the next three shows. We're going to talk a lot this morning. I was going to continue to do kind of an analysis of the overall general fiscal cliff. We're going to focus more on the election results this morning and what they may mean for all of us. Then next weekend I'll revert back more on the fiscal cliff. And then the following weekend, which will be Thanksgiving weekend, that'll be a continuation of some other assorted things that I want to convey. Now, this show is a call-in, and you may do that. You may reach me on this number. The following two shows will not be call-in because they will be pre-recorded. You won't know that. Doesn't make any difference. You won't know when I did it, but it doesn't really make any difference. It's just that there won't be any call-in on those two shows, okay? Those will be pre-recorded because I'm out of town, or I will be out of town. So that's what we're going to focus on over the next 3 weeks. Now, then we're going to try to integrate all of this information as to what it means for you in investing. Let me just start off by saying this past week was action-packed. And we have reached a point, in my view, in the markets where it's quite indecisive. The risk is extremely high. This is not a time to be bold and aggressive. It's a time to be reluctant. Seasonality-wise, we're in a good time. But this fiscal cliff problem and the stance that's being taken is enormous. And I don't think you really gain an insight into that after you've gone through all the election results and basically what it means. You also have the problems, of course, in Europe. They will play heavily on what is occurring here. And we have an opportunity to really be smart on what is happening in Europe, to gain an insight, a window, if you will, into what could possibly happen here in the U.S., because they are ahead of us on that. You're also seeing some leading companies behave very strangely. I would put Apple as number one in that category, perhaps Google as number two. You might also center up on a company like McDonald's, which has been historically very steady, quite consistent, growing list of clients, and notice the price of the stock. It is down considerably from its high. If the McDonald's can't hold, you know we have potential problems. All right, so we're going to feed a lot of information into this over the next 2 or 3 weeks. The end result of all of this is you should be in a much better position to figure out what your strategy is for the markets. Now, for those who are not quick, nimble traders, and they're looking for long-term buy and hold, this is going to be quite a challenge, and you should behave accordingly. So we're going to start on this, see how much we get through here this morning. It'll be a continuation into next week and then the following week beyond that. By that time, I should have perhaps, hopefully, exhausted this particular topic. But I believe it to be just absolutely massive. Now, it's quite interesting, and I was sent this chart by a friend of mine Friday, and it was absolutely astonishing to me. What he did is he laid out the S&P from 2000 when it topped. You will recall that in 2002, we had a massive sell-off, the market bottomed, and the S&P then advanced into October of 2007. That movement was exactly 807 points in the S&P. Then we declined, of course, into March of 2009, and have made another advance, and recently hit 1475 on the S&P 500. The movement from that low in March of 2009 to the recent high was exactly 807 points. I was astonished. Now, I knew the percentages were roughly the same, but I had not looked at the chart and figured out to the point how much each advance was. That is, the advance from 02 to 07 was 807 points. The advance from 09 to 1475 was 807 points. So the question becomes here, is this a mild pullback or is this the beginning of another significant decline? Remember, that decline from 2000 to 02 was roughly 50%. The decline from 07 into 09 was roughly 55 to 60%, depending on which index you use. So this is kind of what they call a classic Elliott Wave ABC correction. So the question becomes, did we in fact end the bear market in 2009, or have we just seen a correction to that massive decline, and then we'll get another huge, significant leg down? The next few weeks, perhaps a month or two or three, was going to go a great deal in determining where we are in that pattern. And it is crucial, or else you'll be looking at another massacre like we had in 2001 and 2 and 2008 and early 2009. With all of that as a backdrop, let's take a look at what really happened during this election. Both parties spent maybe $2 billion on their campaign, a huge sum of money. Pardon me. The end result, we're right back where we started. We are divided. We have economic malaise. We have the fiscal cliff. And it's all being dominated by the same political leaders in government. So I think that this change somewhat election was vigorously reaffirmed as a status quo. I guess a related theme on the Tuesday election results might be whether returning Democratic president, a Senate still controlled by the Democrats, and the House still held by the Republicans would back up the status quo of Washington gridlock. If we continue to have this for another 2 years, my guess would be it is not going to be fruitful. Now, President Obama was reelected, of course, by forging a coalition of African Americans, of which he gained about 95% of the vote. The Latino Hispanics, about 73%. And then we had the youth generation, about 60%. And he picked up a sizable number of the white votes among the women. Those groups dominated the election. Governor Romney, solid majorities in older voters and whites and males. He was preferred by the voters on the economic issues that were supposed to dominate the election, yet it was not enough to carry him to victory. It has been said that Governor Romney won the biggest majority of the white vote of any presidential candidate in U.S. history, who then failed to win the White House. Solid majority of men and married women, two-thirds of the whites, high-income voters, evangelical Christians, white Catholics, 30% of the Jewish vote, which I found to be somewhat amazing and subdued, but that's the way it is. So if we looked at the number of votes cast by race and or ethnic class between 2008 and 2012, white voters actually declined from about a 98 million to 91 million. African American votes remained about the same, about 16 million. Hispanics went up slightly from 11 to 12 million, and then other voters went from were pretty much the same. The big significant difference is that the white vote did not go to the poll. It had a reduction of about 6 to 7 million votes. So President Obama's reelection demonstrated his political power of emerging Democratic majority. Coalition is still intact, and that is in the face of an anemic economy, chronic high unemployment. So it has staying power. It sticks with the incumbents. Jobless rate among African Americans, 14.5%. Young people, 18 to 30, 17%. 12% in the Hispanic community, which compares to a 5.5% jobless rate among the whites. Yet his jobless coalition stayed with him, while better-off whites voted for change. So it turns the conventional logic upside down. The Romney camp obviously failed in hindsight to realize what was happening. It was, although Halley touted, as the economic conditions would dictate a change, and that camp felt very confident that they were going to be winning, according to polls, two salient factors emerged. It really wasn't the economy. It was the class social issue of where the votes went. The second point is that the Romney camp felt confident that the white vote would turn out and sweep him to victory, and it did not. Surprise, shame, whatever, it was alarming. Mitt Romney won the white voter by 20 points. In the swing states, he dramatically underperformed. He only won about 45% of the whites in New Hampshire, 51 in Wisconsin, 47 in Iowa, 54 in Colorado. And, of course, we know that Virginia and Florida also went with President Obama. Blue-collar whites did not vote. So the Obama machine kept spending money on TV ads that demonized Romney in the swing states. And by the time he responded, his image was trashed with too many voters, especially blue-collar whites. It was also alarming that I think one of the major factors that really contributed to downfall was the little video that he had that said he really didn't expect that 45%, 47% that was on the government dole to vote for him. That obviously did not bode well. So the Obama machine built a firewall of swing states where electoral votes that had to hold no matter how many millions of popular vote the machine was going to lose. And in the end, he won all the swing states except North Carolina, which he barely won, which he must have given up on early because of his stance on homosexuality. So the debate over the role of the U.S. federal government was perhaps the starkest dividing line. 8 of the 10 who believed government should do more to solve problems voted for President Obama. An almost equal number of those who believe the government is doing too many things voted for Romney. In essence, the voters were casting their preference for the U.S. economy that either continues to have extreme government control and slide in toward the abyss of a European-style social welfare state, or swings back to an American free enterprise capitalistic state. They clearly made their preference. The minority groups want the European-style welfare state, while the upper-income whites want the capitalistic system. Therein lies the dividing line. So already about 47% of U.S. households pay no income tax, and half of all U.S. households has a family member that's collecting a subsidy from the U.S. government. That's financed, of course, by the top 5% of the wealthy Americans who pay 60% of the taxes to the federal government. So it is the country has definitely moved from right of center to, at best, center, and probably left of center. Then we turn to some of the other agencies. Congress, most notably, would be, and of course, the Senate and the House. The House has 236 Republican members. They lost three or four seats, I believe, but they managed to hold on to the majority with very little change. They also capitalized on the control of state legislatures and were able to redraw districts in those states and built a firewall to Democratic gains in the so-called states, which kind of gives them, so they control the legislature to a great degree, made improvements in the legislature, very effective at redrawing the districts, so that was a plus for all of them. In November of 2010, Republicans gained control of all elements of state governments in key swing states, including Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Pennsylvania, which was supposed, in turn, to ensure a Republican control of the House of Representatives and probably, perhaps, the presidency. They did not get the presidential vote, although in many of these governments they controlled legislatures. North Carolina, which President Obama lost by 2%, GOP controls 9 of 13 seats. Florida, President Obama won by 0.5%, the GOP controls 17 of 27 seats. In Ohio, President Obama lost by less than 2%, the GOP controls 12 of the 16 seats. It goes on and on and on. Virginia, 8 of 13. Pennsylvania, 13 of 18. Wisconsin, 5 of 8. Michigan, 9 of 14 seats. In Michigan, President Obama won by 8%. Wisconsin, 6%. Pennsylvania, 5%. These are huge, huge victories. Yet, the Republicans control the state legislatures. They were not able to get the white vote to come out to vote for Romney. Now the House Republicans have set the showdown with President Obama over the fiscal cliff. President Obama gave a brief 15 or 20-minute speech on Friday about the coming negotiations with Congress over the fiscal cliff, and he reiterated in very dramatic form his stance. Over 250, your joint return, you're going to pay more. Now, I would tell you, you got to think about this. If this passes and stays into effect, and you're sitting in there, you and your wife both work, you're making good money, you're making a couple hundred, she's making 150, 200, you're in that 400,000 range, you know that anything over 250, you're going to get, if this passes and stays in effect, you're going to be murdered. However, if you get a divorce, and she makes 250, and you make, or she makes 200, and you make 200, that's 400, but you would be taxed at the lower rate. You would essentially get a huge tax break by getting a divorce and filing separate returns. I mean, is this crazy or what? So is 250 going to stand? My best information, who knows, but my best information from people who do this and are very, very good at it is that it's not going to be 250. The number 1 million has been mentioned. I think the best guess on the street right now is going to be 750. It may even be 500, but it would not be 250. No way they're going to agree that those tax rates on a family of a husband and wife making $250,000 a year. Can you imagine living in northern New Jersey or New York, or maybe L.A. or California, and making $300,000, and you're going to, particularly in New York, and you're going to be jacking these taxes up? I can't believe it's going to happen. But But that's what we're set. So we're set for a showdown. We've got the 1-2 punch of expiring Bush area tax cuts. We got across the board spending cuts to the Pentagon domestic programs that could total $800 billion. Now, today's program, probably not today, but the next program, the week after, we're going to look at what this really means in terms of GDP. We also have other elements, the expiration of the 2% cut in payroll taxes, unemployment benefits for long-term jobless that would disappear in 2013. So it is massive and is of huge impact upon the market. We saw some of that reflected last week when we saw post-election Dow down 300 points. What happened to set that off? Obviously, there was a surprise to the market. I really don't believe that the market was anticipating that the election would come out as a status quo. I think the market anticipated there would be a shift of power in some form to the Republican side. They didn't get it. You got to remember, Wall Street did not back President Obama this time. They backed Governor Romney. President Obama's total votes went from 69 million to 60 million. He actually had 9 million less votes than he had in the 08 election. But what was startling was that Governor Romney actually got less votes than Senator McCain did in 08. The white vote did not go to the poll. And these are the consequences. They had it all figured out, but they didn't show. Amazing. So if we look at the Russell 2000 information technology sector, gets about 60% of its revenue from inside the U.S. borders. Producers of raw materials, 70%. Industrial energy, 80% of the revenue comes from within the U.S. A new CBO report says, if an agreement cannot be reached to avoid the fiscal cliff, it would knock the U.S. economy into recession and cause a spike in the jobless rates to over 9% by the fall. Job losses are some of the earliest signs of a genuine slide into a recession because they spark fear and panic into the minds of the consumer, thereby causing a pullback in spending. So the health of the U.S. labor market is a key driver for the direction of the S&P 500. You're already seeing some of the companies announcing the curtailment cancellations for plans of expansion and closing down. Boeing announced that it's closing down 3 of its 13 divisions in defense. At least one, perhaps more than that, are located in California, which is already suffering huge problems. So you know it's going to come. The companies are not going to blow themselves up because of the added cost of the taxation and the curtailment of business. They will let people go. So I fully anticipate that you're going to see an increase in the unemployment rate from present 7.9% up into the mid-8s, perhaps higher. Even if there's a compromise on the fiscal cliff, the unemployment rate is still going to rise. So be ready for it. So what are some of the key ingredients of the fiscal cliff? A bitterly divided Congress and a White House. You could tell that from President Obama's speech on Friday. Government spiraling debt or overhaul of its unwieldy tax code. Do you think you're really going to get this done in a few months? It's not going to happen. The best we can hope for is a patch. Okay, we're going to have a continuation of this next week. I hope you enjoy. You're listening to Stock Market Strategies. I'm Ed Handley. Have a great day.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
BYOD. The employee owns the devices, they bring them into work, and then they hook up to the local network. And so this whole movement toward portable devices is actually transforming all of IT. And there are a lot of opportunities there. All the security related to BYOD, bring your own device, a lot of security issues, security policy relating there. Application development for all of these items, it's a very, very big area.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Hi, Audi.
Hi, Santi.
Cool new car. And look at that radio.
Finally got myself a brand new car with HD radio technology standard.
HD radio? That's the digital broadcast radio with the new HD2, HD3 channels?
Yep. And my new car has factory installed HD radio with artist experience and iTunes tagging.
Wow, this is cool. I was looking at this on HDradio.com and you did it.
Yeah, come on, let's drive.
HD radio. Now available from 28 different automobile brands and more than 150 vehicles. Go to HDradio.com for more.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7742.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for